Welcome back. If you aren't already following Naked, please take a minute to do so so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Each follow means so much and it actually helps a lot. If you have more than just a minute, it would be absolutely incredible if you could leave a review and maybe even share an episode with a friend. I'm relatively new to the pod world, especially new to the things that are important in the podcasting world. And apparently reviews and follows are up there on the list of importance. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. Welcome to Naked, where stories unfold. I'm your host, Janelle, a once former pastor's wife who exchanged small town living for a nomadic life. The unexpected change in our life led my husband and our four kids to traveling the world. From years of being rooted in our small town to the thrill of wandering the world, our story has been anything but ordinary. On our journeys, we've met amazing people, learned their way of life, and heard their unique stories, which has led me to understand the profound impact of shared experiences. In each episode, we explore moments of transformation, guided by one single question. Is there a time in your life when everything changed? We invite ordinary storytellers like yourself to share the often unexpected turns in life. So grab a seat and settle in. This is the Naked Podcast. My guest today is really dear to my heart. We've had many conversations in the past, but this one we had for this podcast is definitely my favorite. We met a couple years back at a potluck when we were going to a mutual friend's house for dinner. And it just so happened that a few weeks later, we ended up being neighbors in a jungle in Nicaragua. There were literally monkeys jumping from tree to tree on a regular basis. This area of the jungle is home to so many snakes and crocodiles and tarantulas and every other kind of critter you could find. And Alex is not actually afraid of any of them. I remember the one day when he like picked up a tarantula and let it walk up his arm and I was like, oh my goodness. He is a brave soul, and you'll hear that in his story today. He is just somebody with so much resilience and bravery and courage. He became really good friends of our family and came over to our house often to enjoy watching movies or just chatting and definitely always eating. We do love a good meal together. And honestly, I know little bits about Alex's story as we shared our time together, but nothing like he told me in this podcast. It was such a delight to sit and hear more of his journey and where he came from and the struggles that he worked through and came out of. Honestly, this story really reminded me of the importance of Naked and why sharing our journeys in life is so, so needed. I recommend grabbing a tissue. This one does get a bit emotional. And if you hear birds, dogs, and monkeys in the background, don't worry. Honking horns, it's just all part of Nicaragua. I also want to make mention that there is conversations around suicide and drug addiction, so I want you to be aware prior to listening to this podcast. Again, thank you so much for being here and for joining us and being part of the Naked community. Thank you so much for being here today. My guest today is somebody we met in a country we really didn't plan to spend much time in. I've talked about Nicaragua quite a few times on the podcast, but the beautiful thing about traveling is meeting people and making connections and like deep heart connections. And that oftentimes doesn't happen when you're just like flying in and out of countries, but Nicaragua was one of those countries we actually stayed in for quite a long time, like a year and a half. So we were able to like really create and cultivate friendship and relationship on a deeper level with people. And my guest today is Alex, and somebody who we just like took into our family. He just became one of our own. We got to spend part of Christmas together. We've like had many, many talks and conversations, and really one of the hardest parts of leaving Nicaragua is leaving the people that you love so much. So today I'm so delighted to have Alex here. He has been such an incredible mentor to our daughter Kilea with Taekwondo, a friend to our kids, and just like an addition to our family. So thank you so much for being here, Alex, and for taking the time to hang out with me.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure. I miss you guys a lot. It's been over a year now since I haven't seen you guys. Spending time in Nicaragua with you guys has been monumental. You know, like you said, you guys were there for me for Christmas and all these different times where I would have been by myself. So it was really nice to have some extended family there to take care of me.
How about you tell them a little bit about yourself, where you are, and what you're doing right now in life?
Yeah, okay. So my name's Alex. I'm 31 years old. I live in San Juan del Sur, Nicaragua, and I've lived here for the last 3 years. Since moving here, I've been the local Taekwondo teacher. I started my school about 2 years ago. and started with doing after school programs for kids, and then it built traction, and now it's become one of the most popular after school activities for kids here on the south end of the country. So all day every day is Taekwondo day for me, and it's also how I got really close with Janelle's daughter Kiki through Taekwondo, and it's how I've gotten through to a lot of kids and a lot of people here through martial arts. So that's what I do now that I'm here in Nicaragua.
And you are such an incredible teacher, mentor. I think there's you can feel a little, it can feel a little lost going to a new country, and a lot of people that come, they don't even know the language, like myself. And having somebody, an activity that you can do, where it's creating that community, I think especially for the kids, because in the area that Alex lives in, it's like this little surfer, fisherman kind of town. And then everybody that lives there, that's expats, live within about 20 minutes on either end of that. So there's not a hub of kids typically that are hanging out in the town, that are like outside expat kids. And it really creates that community. I know for Kile, she's like, wow. I mean, originally it was, her and you, and then it turned into this bigger group. And just having a sense of community when your kids that are living in the jungle, away from, your normal society and living, can feel a little lost. And you've done a really incredible job of creating a really safe place for kids to come and move their bodies and to create community and to create structure. I think that's a beautiful thing that you've been able to offer. And Kila has been looking for some sort of connection like that as we've traveled, and there's just something really unique about what you're doing there and who you are as a person.
Thank you. Yeah, that's something I really, it was important to me that Taekwondo is something available for everyone. It doesn't matter where you come from or what you have in your bank account. So a first thing for me was to learn how to speak Spanish, because I'm living in a Spanish-speaking country, and if I'm going to be a teacher in this country, I need to have the skill set to be bilingual in English and Spanish. And so I focused my first year on learning Spanish well, and even so much as learning how to teach Taekwondo in Spanish. Like, I had specific help on how can I lead my Spanish classes by focusing on teaching martial arts. And so I did it that way, and then I just learned Spanish through more classes, but also with just immersion. And now I'm at a point where I used to have, okay, Tuesdays was my Spanish Taekwondo class, and Thursdays was my adult or kids advanced, and so on, and I split it up. But now I'm at a point where every class is open to everybody, and they're all bilingual. So every single class that I teach in English and in Spanish. And every single class that I have is a mix of English speakers and Spanish speakers, expats and locals. And
That's so cool.
that was one of my biggest goals here, is because before Taekwondo, what I noticed was there was no activities that brought everybody together. It was either activities for expats that, with all due respect, cost way too much for any local to be able to participate in. Or the opposite, there would be these free activities for locals that none of the expats really cared to attend to. So now what I've done is I've started with the expats first, because that's where my market is mainly. And then I started teaching free classes to the local kids. And then through those free classes, started to sponsor some of them. So out of those three free classes that I've done, I now have five kids that are fully sponsored. So we provide them with uniforms, we provide them with belts. Their only responsibility is they need to help me whenever I need help. So If a little kid needs to learn this, that's your job. If the gym needs to be cleaned up after class, that's your job. So it's delegating responsibilities in exchange for their ability to come work out. And it's working great. And just recently, this school or starting this school year, I started doing sliding scale prices for Taekwondo classes.
Yeah.
So the fixed rate is $60 a month for unlimited classes, and that's just the flat rate. You can come as many times as you want, similar to a gym membership. But that's unaffordable for many people here. So what I decided to do is, like, it's like a three scale sliding scale. If you make more than X, you're paying the full price. If you make less than X, but you make Y, it's this price, and it drops all the way down to $20 a month. So depending on the household income, some people are paying $60 a month, which is reasonable and a good price.
Yeah.
And then the people that have proven to me that that's just not in their, it's not in their budget.
Yeah.
We always can work something out, because when I was young and in Taekwondo, I was broke and I lived alone and I had no money. And the last thing my master told me was, don't you dare miss a class. You know, you need this. So you don't have to pay me anything, but you need to help me. And that was my deal. And I was 16 years old when he made me that deal. And I have never paid for a Taekwondo class since.
Wow.
And it was because I had a ton of responsibility, but it was just, it showed me that money isn't everything.
Yeah.
And sometimes the individual is more important, you know. I got some students that I won't sponsor for that reason, because I can see that they don't want to pay for it because they're a little lazy. And if I sponsor them, they're not going to, not going to appreciate it the way that I appreciated it when I was sponsored.
Right.
So I'm selective. But like I said, now I'm at the point where parents can decide, okay, it's okay for me, it's $20 a month.
Yeah.
That if it's worth it to your kid, just about everybody can afford $20 a month for an activity, or can make their budget available to afford $20. That works out to be like almost $2 a class. That's pretty,
it's pretty amazing.
Any more than that, like, cause I still have to pay rent. I still have to pay the lights, you know, so things like that. It can't all be a gift.
No,
but I do want Taekwondo to be like it was for me. Just because you can't afford it, but you love it, shouldn't be the only thing holding you back. There's enough fucking things in this country that hold people back from doing their, living their lives, that Taekwondo doesn't need to be one of them.
Right.
You know, and some of these kids that I have that are 15, 16, that love it and take it serious and are showing real promise, had no idea that this could one day become a job. You know, I asked them, what do you want to be when you're older? Oh, I want to be a doctor, or I want to be a vet. And I'm like, those are all amazing goals.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever thought about what they would like to do? What about teaching Taekwondo? And they all kind of look at each other like, is that even allowed? Is that a possibility? Like, and trying to explain to them, like, if you keep showing the same level of commitment and discipline, hell yeah, it's possible. Yeah. I need the help, but I'm also a control freak, and I set an incredibly high standard for myself that would need to be reflected in my students. So I'm just trying to show kids, like, this could turn into an opportunity that could serve you forever.
Yeah.
You know, as long as we keep growing together.
It's amazing that you're, but, well, what your teacher did for you has created like a really beautiful understanding and ripple effect for you to now see that, if you see that a child is able to give and work in exchange for that
what your efforts and your teaching, that you're able to see that, no, that's really important. And like you said, the person matters. And I think what we really experience is, even Keila, she's never really felt very sportsy, if you will, and never really felt like she really connected with a lot of different types of activities or things that we would do until she started doing Taekwondo. And she's like, I would have never known that I was even good at it, never mind that I liked it. And she just fell in love with it, and how good it was for her well-being, not just her body, but her mind, you know. It was just
totally
so good.
And like, it's fun for me to see, because she was at the age that I had this big pivotal moment in my life where Taekwondo saved my life, you know. And she ain't the first. I've had messages from other girls her age, real tearjerkers, you know, that I had no idea they were in such a bad way, you know, mentally.
Yeah.
And then Taekwondo has given them an outlet, given them a purpose. And even when I'm like trying to get them to do things that I don't even quite like in Taekwondo, like the basic forms, this and that, they're like, can you teach me another? Can you teach me? Like, really? You want to? Yeah, let's go. Like, okay. Because I'm putting my own projections onto them as well. Like, I hated that stuff when I was when I was doing learning. But all these young ladies love it.
Right, and it's given
them a real sense of purpose. And I can see, even though I'm a full decade, not like a full generation above them, I can see all the same patterns, the same connections, the same spark ignite, you know. And like, even with the friends, finding friends, most families that move here with their kids are now moving here with kids that more than likely lost all their buddies, you know, to come here.
Yeah.
And I remember the first, because I used to do the girls' teenage class and the boys' teenage class. And then in my head, I'm like, this is silly. Why don't we have two classes with boys and girls? Then everybody can train twice a week together.
Yeah.
The amount of awkward, uncomfortable, hormonal tension in that first class was hilarious. And I didn't know if it was going to work. But then after like a week, now I'm seeing everybody's making plans together to go out for breakfast after Taekwondo. Aww. They have Taekwondo WhatsApp group chats. Pretty sure a couple of them are dating now, you know, young love. And yeah. I'm just like, and their parents are thanking me. Like, parents are like, hey, so-and-so really, really loves Taekwondo. It's really made an impact. He had no friends, and now he's got plans on the weekend. And it, not only is it making friends, but you're all making friends in a healthy environment.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
From the age of 14, or if you're as young as me, 12, bad decisions can start, and bad groupings can pair up. And then all of a sudden you're teenagers on the street hanging out with just not the best of crowds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So even though with Taekwondo, everybody can come from a different background, like so different, you can create a friendship and a bond that's just based off of your sharing of martial arts, you know, because I did all the same stuff when I was 17. I was a loner. And all I did was Taekwondo. And then slowly more people came into the mix of Taekwondo. And then by the time I was 18, my four closest friends were only people that did Taekwondo. And you never, ever would have thought of us hanging out together outside of this class.
Wow.
So to me, that's another really beautiful part of martial arts that is apart from training. It's apart from self-defense. It's about building lifelong friendships. Like, my training partner from my entire youth up until I was 20, he lives in the west part of Canada now, and I always lived on the east. And we still talk once a week, you know, just catching up, chatting.
That's so cool.
And Like, we never would have been buddies. We just, our social backgrounds are so different, everything. But during that time of our lives, we were best buds. We'd travel together for tournaments. We would spar. We would warm up together, even to the point where we were both black belts. I would coach him for his fight, then he would coach me for my fight. We would take our ass kickings like some man, or we would win and celebrate together, but we were in it together. And all this friendships and all these just started through meeting in Taekwondo. Wow. And now I'm seeing it with the teenagers. I'm seeing it with little kids, you know, and I'm seeing it like, oh, Matthew loves Taekwondo. He has his friend who loves it as well. And she's going to come try it out. If that's okay, they would love to do it together. I'm like, heck yes, bring them, you know, because a form like commitment comes from a kid way better when they have their best girlfriend there, you know, like now I got a group of four girls that are all between 6 and 7 years old that are just like, what? Right. So, and then the parents love it. For the parents, then Taekwondo almost becomes secondary.
Yeah.
Because they're doing it for the love that their kids have, right?
Yeah, so totally.
Taekwondo is great, but now I'm bringing my kid to this activity where all of her friends are there. They have good time. It's beautiful. I love
it. It is beautiful. I'm full. It just fills you up, I can tell.
Yeah, it's the things like that, because like financially teaching Taekwondo does this. But like, I still have a letter in my room that Kiki wrote me that if ever I'm feeling upset, I read that, because those are the things that make you rich. And like, it's a really private message, but reading the impact that I have on other people really, like I said, it almost brings tears to my eyes, because sometimes you feel like, fuck, what am I doing this for? Yeah. You know, like, I'm trying really hard. And then all it takes is one thing like that to be like, everything makes sense. This is
worth it. You know, it's all worth it.
Wow. And I feel like the richest guy in the world.
Right.
You know,
whoops.
And especially, I would say almost 10 of my students over the last 2 years have told me something similar, or their parents have told me something similar on their behalf, you know, so to me, that's what makes it
amazing.
All love, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's something. That's having that like effect on people. Where you, I remember someone once saying to me, "You can never uninvest in somebody. Like, what you've put into them is with them forever." You know, and like what you're doing with these kids, young kids, teenagers, women, men, you know, of all ages, that confidence. You don't know what you're doing for someone. You're just doing the thing that you love, and that like, and that is exploding out of you, and it's being able to, it's transforming people's well-being, you know, and it's pretty incredible what you're doing. And I love that you're doing it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Janelle.
I was just going to say, I love that you're doing what you love, like that you're doing something that you're so passionate, that you love doing. And that has its own spark to it and energy to it too.
Yeah, I think, I don't know who said this quote, it might be Tupac, but, and I might get it wrong, but it's like, when you let your light shine, you unconsciously give other people permission to let their light shine. And so I never wouldn't, like, I don't describe myself as a shining light. Like, I got my baggage, I got my crap, but when it comes to Taekwondo, that's where I let my light shine, and that's where I can give all my heart and soul. Mm-hmm. And I think just through my students seeing that in me gives them permission to try to do it themselves, but for themselves, not to not to emulate me, but to just, there's something I always tell my students all the time, especially they always second guess it. Trust yourself. Do what you trust it. Don't look at me. You're going to look at me. You're going to make a mistake. Use what's up here. Trust yourself. And then most of them do it correctly. And it's like, let your light shine, you know? And I think when a role model, like somebody in my position that's setting an example, when I let my light shine, even sometimes when I don't feel like it, they see that, and that it, I don't have to tell them to do it. They just see that they can, you know, which I think is beautiful, because so many kids crack out of their shell. Like, my current top student, she used to be the one that was always late for class. And just very, like, if I had to describe her as, like, a personality, she's kind of, like, punk rock.
Yeah.
And always late. I'd give her shit, always late. And then it just clicked one day for her. She's like, can I get a uniform? Can I get this? Can we do this? And then now she's like, can I come to the little kids' class and help out? Can I do this? Aww. Can I do that? And so I've watched these kids that show up to their first class kind of like, yeah, like this, to now, mm-hmm, like yesterday I'm like, girl, you're gonna do the whole warm-up for these kids. Like, they're gonna bow to you, they're gonna say yes ma'am to you, you are in charge of this class. And her, wow, face is like, okay. But she nailed it, you know. Wow. She nailed it. And so the girl that I met a year and a half ago would have never jumped at that. Just, she was so quiet and timid, and now she's shouting, she's instructing, she's leading.
It's incredible, it's the, like, confidence that you've instilled.
God, think about if this kid ever has to do anything in school, like a public presentation.
Yeah.
That fear is, like, okay, if you suck at public speaking, you're always going to have that, like,
yeah,
pit in your chest.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe what would have, that pit might have stopped you in the past, well, now she's gonna and go out and get it done, you know.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, is something that, that's special, you
that
know.
That is special. You get special. That's a gift. What you're doing, yeah, is like a gift. Yeah.
I'm proud of her. Okay. You know, I'm proud of her. And I'm proud of myself, you know.
I'm proud of you too.
Because, thank you. Oh.
You're a great guy, Alex. You are such a great soul. You really are. I really miss you. Miss having you around.
I miss you too.
Yeah. You're just one of the family. What are you drinking, buddy?
I was drinking coffee. I had two during our first little chit chat, and now I'm definitely overstimulated. So I've made the swap to some nice cold water.
Well, in hot Nicaragua, it's like humid days. I'm surprised.
I don't care if it's 4 million degrees. I always have a hot coffee.
Really? That's crazy. I can't. I am a tea drinker, but I couldn't when I was there. I was like, I need cold. I just need cold water.
And I've been living with these German fellas that they're making like ginger cacao teas and all this. I'm like, cool. They're like, you want to try? I'm like, yes, I want to try. And they got the whole kitchen in this giant like health tea. They're like doing a whole process right now that, amazing, I'm not upset about. Like, let me try these delicious, perfect, organic teas you're making. Yeah,
that's, yeah, awesome. That's great. Well, we should dive into a little bit. I know bits of your story. We shared a little bit over the years that we got to hang out, but I know when I talked to you, I think I talked to you about this even when we were in Nicaragua, like this podcast idea that I started and just sharing story. And then eventually recently had a conversation like, would you want to like share your story, or a part of your story where a moment when everything changed? So I don't know where that takes you today or about how far back we're going.
Yeah. So I do have a real pivotal moment in my life. Like we kind of mentioned earlier, most people have several pivotal moments that led to major changes.
Yeah.
But the one that I can think of the most is because, yeah, I was young. And so I can say I probably had 5 to 10 pivotal moments since then that has yet again changed my life.
Yeah.
But none of those moments would have happened without the initial, you know?
Yeah.
And to explain that moment, I feel like I need to go before that moment a little bit.
Totally.
And then can talk about what happened during and after. So I'm gonna just get cracking at it.
I love it.
So I've done Taekwondo my entire life for the most part. I started when I was just turning 7 years old. And I did Taekwondo nonstop. It was my addiction. It was my passion. It was my love. And I did it all the way up until I got into high school. And I was 13, turning 14 in that year. During that summer, I got introduced to smoking weed. I also got introduced to other more hard recreational drugs. I got introduced to skateboarding. And I shouldn't say introduced. I was always a bit of a skateboarder, but it was kind of like pivotal teenage years where I'm like, ah, Taekwondo, I'm going to grab a skateboard and go meet some girls and smoke some pot and, you know, be a bit of a hooligan.
Yeah.
And so I did that, started high school and did not improve. One thing that happened to me during that time is I gained a lot of weight. Because I did Taekwondo my whole youth at an extreme level and a high competitive level, that I never really focused on my diet. I was just always exercising so extreme that I never put on a pound of body fat.
Right.
But during that summer that I quit, started smoking weed, started eating more ice cream, started doing less with my body, I probably gained 20 pounds. And I was a small kid. So 20 pounds as a small kid, you wear that.
Yeah.
And so when high school started, I was bullied tremendously. Like I really bullied bad, really, really badly bullied. And I couldn't escape it. I had my black belt in Taekwondo at the time. But with gaining all the weight and just feeling down on my luck, I had no confidence to stand up for myself ever. Hmm. And then that just continued, and I continued to spiral downward in like a low self-worth, you know, like nobody likes me, nobody cares about me. Why are people so mean to me? Like, what did I didn't do anything, you know, I didn't do anything. I just looked weird. I had long hair and then I was chunky. I was just a little bit chunky. And so I moved out my house. The reason I moved out of my house is because during that time I became insufferable to live with. You know, now that I'm a 30-year-old man reflecting back on it, my behavior was just me taking out the abuse I was receiving at school. When I got into high school and was dealing with all this bullying, I had no outlet other than being at home. You know, my outlet was at home, and it was an inappropriate outlet, you know, taking my shit out on my mom.
Yeah.
And so my mom just came at me with a very clear rule, like, you're not to live under this roof with this kind of behavior. I was bad. Like, I won't go into details, but I was disrespectful to my mom. And so being a 14-year-old at the time with the attitude of, frig off. So I just said, fine, I'll move. No problem. Let me move in with my dad. I'll move in with my dad. And so I packed my things and I moved in with my dad. Now, moving in with my dad was a big mistake because my dad is an addict, like a bad addict. And it didn't take long for my dad and I to have a falling out following one of his come downs. You know, he took his frustration out on me over something that I didn't even do. And it turned into a fist fight. Like, me and my dad got into a violent fist fight. And then he kicked me out. And so at that point, I'm now kicked out of both my parents' house at 14 years old. I just about to turn 15. And so I had a Volkswagen Golf. And I spent that entire summer living in my Golf.
Wow.
So I just lived on people's couches or slept in the back of my car. It was summertime at the time, so it wasn't like freezing cold. And I did that for 3 months before I saved up and moved in with somebody that I worked with. And even then, they only had a 2-bedroom house with 2 bedrooms full. So I actually rented the kitchen, and I had my bed. My bed was on the kitchen floor, and I lived on their kitchen floor for a few months, saving up my money to get my own apartment. And so I finally moved into my own apartment with 2 other roommates. And at this point, I would have been about 15 years old. And I did that for a year. And during that year, things just kind of got worse and worse as far as the road I was going down. Started experimenting a lot with party drugs, using heavier drugs, like cocaine, or ecstasy, things like that. And still trying to go to school because I'm still in high school, living on my own. And I remember this will be the pivotal moment that I'm referring to. I remember laying in my bed, and I'm in my apartment with my 2 other roommates, and I'm just trying to get some sleep so I can go to school. And it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're still raging parties, right? Wow. And I'm not able to sleep. I'm trying to like cover my ears with a pillow, and I never went out and said anything, but in that moment, I'm like, what the hell am I doing, you know, with my life? I'm 16 or I'm 15. And I'm just trying to finish high school to do then what? I'm living with a bunch of guys that are doing drugs every day, drinking every day. The house looks like a crack house, you know. And it's like, I need to get out of here now. And so I moved in with my mom. I just asked my mom, like, things have changed. It's been 2 years since she kicked me out. I'm like, I'm different. I will show you respect. All I want to do, Mom, is get out of where I'm at and get my shit together. And so my mom, of course, is like, yes, come home. Like, that's all she wanted in the first place anyway. Yeah. But my mom is a put her foot down kind of girl. Yeah. So until you act right, you're not welcome, period. Yeah. And my mom will suffer as long as she needs to suffer for that message to get across. And so I was 16 at that point, moved back with my mom. And first thing I did was sign back up for Taekwondo. I showed up. It's been 3 years since I did any Taekwondo class. And I showed up, and I remember it was Master Chung that I showed up to his school, because my original master, Master Lassard, started working for him.
Okay.
So I went to Master Chung's school purely because my master was teaching there. And kind of like how Kiki says she can relate to me, it's like, I want to learn Taekwondo, but from this guy. This is my guy. And so I rejoined, and I started going home at a good hour. I wasn't partying anymore. I wasn't doing any of that. Within reason, I was improving, you know, but I was still 16, 17, 18, I definitely partied on the weekends and found more of a balance and not just going down this wrong road. You know, I had still behaviors down this way, but a constant reach for the lifestyle and the positivity I knew I could have.
Right.
And I think I only lived with my mom for about 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And then I found my own place again, because after living alone for 2 years, it sucks living with your parents again. And but this time it was from a place of consent. Like, my mom supported me. It didn't come from any argument. It came from logic. you know, so I'm like, Mom, I make this much a month. This is how much my apartment costs. I'm doing Taekwondo again. That's what this costs. Here's my budget. I can afford it. And she's like, good for you. Do it. Do it. And so I had my mom's support and I moved into a nice little like one bedroom bachelor pad. So it was just like one giant room, but it was everything I needed as a single guy and was able to continue to go to school, continue to work after school. And then my work schedule opened up enough that I could do 3 Taekwondo classes a week. Wow. So I was able to do everything all still while finishing high school. And all still while working. I worked at a pizzeria, so I was making pizzas. And it just, I found this nice groove of,
right.
I have zero free time, but free time to me meant bad choices for the most part. So I just continued on that cycle. And from then, I remember graduating high school and was at this point, way beyond any skill I had from my previous training because I quit when I was 13.
Okay.
Now that I'm 16, I'm growing more into my adult body and skyrocketed as far as my knowledge, my skill, my commitment, my understanding. And I really loved it. And so I was living in that Taekwondo gym as much as I could. Wow. And then after I graduated high school, Master Chung wanted me to take the summer to relearn everything from white belt to black belt, which is not, most black belts don't remember everything as far as forms, belt levels. They don't remember that stuff. It's not expected. But I thought it was just like a personal challenge from him to me to learn it all again and know it by memory. And so we did the whole summer of learning yellow belt, yellow stripe, green belt, blue belt, red stripe, black stripe, all of them. And then he would quiz me on it. Like I'd go up and he'd be like, okay, do wanyo, which no tell me in English, not telling me what belt level, just perform this form, perform this form. And when I could finally do them all without hesitation, like knew them by name, by heart, he's like, you want a job? And I was just like, he's like, I need somebody to help me teach the kids starting in the school year. So I wanted to take this summer to mentor you into a teacher. He never told me that. But once I had acquired all the skills to not only be a good black belt, but to be a good teacher.
Yeah.
He hired me, you know. So now I was doing 3 days a week teaching Taekwondo and 3 days a week cooking pizzas. And from there, it just... it grew and grew and grew. I never thought Taekwondo was going to be a career of mine because it didn't pay well working for somebody else as a teacher. But my goal at that time in my life was to become an Olympic champion fighter. And I was a good fighter. I really good. I did well in competition. So much so I've ranked high internationally and I've ranked high nationally. But the biggest thing was there was still no money. Even if I won at the world championships, it was still on my dollar to get there and on my dollar to progress from there. And these were dollars I didn't have.
Right.
Like Master Chung paid for my ability to go to the Canadian Nationals twice. Took on all the expenses for me and sponsored me to go to Mexico for the World Taekwondo Open. Like all these things that I've experienced, I would have never even been able to if it wasn't Master Chung deeming me worthy of paying for it. Because he never would have paid for me if it was just for the experience. He's like, no, I have a fighter here that's capable of winning and capable of making a difference. So I'm going to support this. And so he opened many doors to me in that field. I was able to experience a lot, meet a ton of people from all over the world that all do Taekwondo. And so now thinking back on all that, it's like, this man really opened more doors for me. Like my first master opened the door to Taekwondo. He opened the door again when I needed a safe place to return to when my life was kind of going downhill.
Yeah.
And then he introduced me to Master Chung. And like, to Master Chung, Alex is one of my greatest black belts from 5 years ago. And so Master Chung took me under his wing as his new pupil.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, it shaped me into becoming a great teacher. Mm-hmm. All ego aside, I'm good at Taekwondo. And I was a very good fighter. I had an incredible understanding of technique and form.
Yeah.
And then over those couple of years after I graduated high school is what made me a great martial artist, turned into a great teacher, somebody that can teach other people to become great martial artists. And like I said, that's not an ego thing at all. It's something that I'm proud of because there is a big difference between being a great martial artist and being a great instructor.
Yeah.
You know, there's very, very big difference.
Yeah.
So this leads to more pivotal points. But again, all these extra pivotal points are parts that have got me here teaching Taekwondo.
Right.
So I was training for the World Championships for fighting, and I had three coaches. I had one for sparring skills. So this guy is working over the technical aspect of fighting, the science, sports science. Then I had Master Chung, who just beat the shit out of me every day and made me tough, basically. And then I had one other coach, Master Sam Johnson. And Master Sam Johnson was a well-known mixed martial artist. So he knew all martial arts, but was a high degree black belt in Taekwondo. And so we would do every Thursday was conditioning class, which is just another word for he'd beat the crap out of me for an hour or two. But it was based on getting my heart rate so high that I felt like I'm going to die and then start fighting. Because no matter what you feel inside, how out of breath you are, if you're in the middle of the fight, the person on the other side of you doesn't care.
Right.
It's actually an advantage.
Yeah.
So that was my conditioning training. And through this, he realized, he's like, Alex, you are really tough. Like, really tough. You're not scared of anything. And you have a no-quit attitude. And I'm like, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. And he's like, what do you want to do when you're older? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. He's like, you teach Taekwondo, right? Like, yeah. He's like, and he's being honest. He's like, there's no money in teaching Taekwondo for someone else. There just isn't. Have you ever considered a career in corrections? No, I have not. And he's just like, he was at the time the superintendent of Dorchester Penitentiary, which is one of like the bigger prisons in Canada. And he's like, you've got patience, you're calm, you know how to defend yourself, you know how to talk to people. These are skills that will serve you well in this career. And you'll make a lot more money doing that than you will doing this. This can always be your hobby, and you can always have the financial ability to support it by being a correctional officer. And so, okay. And then at the time, I talked to my girlfriend about it. And she thought it was a great idea as well. She was a nurse. And we would be going to the same college and things like that. So she's like, yeah, that's great. And especially she also low-key was saying, like, you're going to need to make more money in this world. You know, and so going back to college was not something I wanted to do. I struggled a lot through school, but I went into a program called Policing and Corrections, which is something I think I could handle.
Yeah.
And I actually did really, really good in college, really good in school. We had over 60 students in our program. And I'm one of two that got a job directly out of college.
Wow.
So I stepped out of college, and it was because I set myself up that way. I was putting in job applications before I ever even had my degree.
Wow.
You know,
mm-hmm.
thinking ahead. Determined. Well, when they call me, I will have a degree, you know?
Yeah.
And that's exactly how it happened. I actually skipped my graduation ceremony where they do the whole hat toss stuff because yeah. I was at a job interview. You know what I mean? So it's like, awesome. I'm going to skip my graduation because this is what I'm here for, the job. I'm not here for the graduation. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
And so I got a job right away at a prison called Northeast Correctional Facility. And that was in Nova Scotia. And so at this point, I was 20 years old and just finished an incredible year of Taekwondo, competing all over the world, but knew that I've reached my cap as right. an athlete. Like, I'm not going to pursue this any further. Now it's time. I'm 20. Now it's time to pursue a career. And so I did that with corrections. And I did corrections for 3 years. Corrections is a job that I would not wish for anyone. It's not worth, really? I'm going to now speak personally, it's not worth the money. It's too mentally draining. I feel like I've got too pure of a soul to be working in such a negative, poisonous environment. And so I didn't like or enjoy corrections. And that by my third year, I really wanted to quit so much that I was like, I'll take a minimum wage job at Walmart doing whatever just to pay the bills.
Yeah.
Just get me out of prison. Yeah. And then an application process opened up for the Nova Scotia Sheriff's Department. And I had friends that were sheriffs, and all my friends that were sheriffs told me, most of which had jumped from corrections to sheriffs.
Okay.
They're like, it's so much less stress. You're so much more respected. Half of your interactions are with civilians in the public that don't have a problem with you, where corrections, it's 100% criminals that all have a problem with you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I applied for it. And again, luck be on my side. Out of 600 applicants, I'm one of six
wow.
that received the job as a sheriff. And I quite enjoyed it. Like, sheriffs is a lot more, you're basically a taxi for dangerous people. Your job is to pick them up from the police, bring them to court, pick them up from court, bring them to jail. So nobody really ever has a problem with the sheriffs because it's like, I'm just your drive buddy. Like, right. you know, I'm just the one that's, so if you have a good day, I'm going to have a good day, and vice versa. There's no, yeah, you're having a bad luck, but this 4-hour drive does not need to be a part of it. You can just, right. you know, so being a sheriff was way more tranquilo, way more yeah. relaxing. And I did that for 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I did that for 5 years and probably would have been doing it for the rest of my life. Had COVID not happened.
Interesting.
Yeah, so my main role as a sheriff was prisoner transportation. And when COVID happened, especially in Canada, they basically froze everything. People aren't leaving buildings. People aren't being transported. There's no travel. So things like moving a prisoner from prison A to prison B weren't happening anymore. And people going from prison to court wasn't happening. Everything was just, so my job as a driver, I would show up in the morning and sit in my truck for 8 hours until my shift was done. And then I'd get out of my truck and go home. And I did that for months.
Whoa.
Going crazy. And like, it got to the point where I was literally losing my mind. And then with all the, there's a lot of other things that came out during that time that I don't want to get into on the podcast, but just things that really made me feel like an outsider, really really castrated me from the rest of the group. And it stressed me out so badly that I went off on stress leave. Like I went off on stress leave to just get time alone, sort out my thoughts. Because it was a really, 2020 was a weird time for everyone.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what was going to happen. But the thought of going back to work, like if I felt ready, then thought about it, I would sink right back into that state of like anxiety, like heart skipping a beat and losing my breath. And I'm like, this is not healthy. This is not this. This is my body's. This is nonverbal cues from my body that I don't belong here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so I decided to explore my options. What's available to me? What can I do to get out of this current situation? And I had two friends that moved to Nicaragua when COVID was bad and Canada was doing a lot of lockdowns. And they made a personal decision to escape that for the time being. Like, oh, we'll travel for the next 6 months and see how things go. And
yeah.
So I started speaking with them a lot, you know, and getting more information and really made the decision in my head. Like, I was at a point where I was borderline suicidal. So I was like, if things don't improve for me, I don't know how much longer I got. And then thinking about what I have as assets and valuables, like that I've accumulated over the years. Okay, if I sell all my stuff, I could probably go survive anywhere in the world for 6 months before I need to make a decision. And so feeling as depressed as I was, when I decided to move to Nicaragua or to come here and check it out, my mental state was, I have nothing left to lose by trying this.
Right.
And when you're a man with nothing left to lose and like borderline suicidal, to hell with it. You know, it's like, I'm going to sit in my living room here and maybe end it. Or I can go try there and maybe end it there. And then nobody would even know, you know, that's the illness that I had in my head at the time.
Yeah.
And so I sold all my stuff. I didn't tell a soul. I told my mom and my grandmother and my partner, my sheriff partner.
Yeah.
They were the only three people that knew this was my plan. And so I sold all my stuff and took a chance and I moved here horrified, you know, and I did it alone and I had $5,000. So that was all I had. I had my backpack and $5,000 to last me with food, rent, whatever. Let's try to stretch this money out as much as I can. But I had an education in Taekwondo. And I also, during that time as the correctional officer sheriff, I received my education as a sports nutritionist.
Okay.
So moving here, I'm like, okay, these are two fallbacks that I have. Yeah. I can do online nutritional coaching, or I can try to see if I could teach Taekwondo. But that seemed like such a hurdle to get through. But I just started with two kids that they were friends, like their family were friends. So they're like, you can teach our two kids. And I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready. And they're like, don't you have like 25 years of experience? I'm just like, yeah, but I don't know if I'm ready. Just start. You're never going to feel ready if you have that kind of mentality. And so I just started with their two kids. And then I think their two kids led to your two kids. And then next thing you know, I landed a job at Tree Casa doing like a program for them for outdoor activities for kids or active activities. And that really grew. I had a lot of students learning Taekwondo there. And then when that program fell apart and I was kind of like, I don't know, like everything's falling apart. Yeah. It really was just falling together. Because the Tree Casa program was a lot of kids that didn't, it was just like a daycare. So their parents are dropping them off and they're doing activities with daycare workers. Not many cared about Taekwondo. They were just there because their parents told them to be there. And so when that program fell apart, let's say there was 40 kids in that program. Wow. 8 of them loved Taekwondo and were heartbroken that it was stopping. So that gave me the idea to find a studio to rent where we are right now and begin teaching these little kids that want it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then that one day filled up within a week. Class is full. Okay, let's add another day. 2 weeks later, second class is full. Okay, let's add another day. 1 month later, third class is full. And now we're a year and a half later. I have classes Monday through Friday. I teach 3 times a week. I have 3 separate age groups. I have separate skill levels. Right now, because it's low season, kids are gone. But if I was to look at my total roster, I have over 45 students now doing Taekwondo. Wow. And that's 45 students, not including the 20 that I volunteer with every week. Hmm. So I have over 60 students if you include the volunteer group that I go with. And it's just been like a small miracle, you know, because in 2020, when everything happened, I thought my life was over, like so over that before I decided to move here, I spent a full day with a gun in my hand, you know, thinking about, I no longer want to participate, you know, in this, in what's going on in the world. I don't want to participate. And so my justification for, you know, taking my life was, this is just not what the human experience is supposed to be. And so I don't want to participate anymore, voluntarily or involuntarily. I'm not participating. And it was a good friend of mine, Vera, that talked me off the ledge. Literally that day, phone in one hand, gun in the other hand. And she's like, call me. Mm-hmm. And she's the one that told me or gave me the idea of, you know, what do you have to lose by coming here? If you're at this point, what will you lose? You will lose nothing.
Yeah.
The worst thing that could happen is you come here and you feel just as bad and then you continue down the path you're on, you know? And so I agreed with her and I was just like, fuck, yeah, you're right. Well, what do I do? She's like, sell everything. You want to come here? You don't need stuff. So sell all your stuff. And so I started selling all my things, which was hard because I came from nothing, you know. I came from living in my car to having a house full of stuff, TV, everything. And then watching my 10 years of hard work accumulate and then dissipate in a week down to, I had $10,000 Canadian. So everything that I've accumulated has amounted to $10,000 Canadian. And then you go to the bank to switch that to US and you really get disappointed. And that's what I, that was, then I bought my plane ticket. I bought my first month's rent here. And then I had $5,000 left over. And then that's what I came here with, you know, and no hope. Like, I shouldn't even say no hope. The smallest shred of hope, because it's like, maybe this could be what saves my life, you know, because my mentality on the plane was what I was going to do back in my living room. I can find a quiet, private place to do that here, you know. And once I got here, it took a lot of adjusting, just new language, new world, everything's different than Canada. But within a couple weeks, I started feeling like myself again. I started feeling happy. I started feeling free. I hadn't felt free in a while to just go do what I want and see who I want. And I didn't have to answer to anybody but myself, you know. There was nobody telling me what to do and telling me that I had to do it or else, which that never would and never will jive with me. And then within a couple weeks, I started teaching Taekwondo just a little bit by little bit. And then now we're 3 years later, people have come and gone, friends have come and gone. And like right now, I'm at a low point in my career financially, going through a bit of like financial troubles. But when I think about what I've started, you know, even though just at this current moment, financially, it's not excelling. It's just the low season, you know, and I've got a studio upstairs with hundreds of dollars in equipment that I've invested, you know. I've got belts and uniforms for kids that I've invested. I've got five or six sponsored kids that never miss a class, that it's the highlight of their week, you know. It's the little things that money can't buy. And now we're 1 week away from September when the school year comes back in, and already like Friday's class typically all through July and August is two people, three people. Last Friday I had 14 people just like that. They're all back from school. You're all back for school, right? And so I know it's going to do this again, and then I'll have the financial ability to continue to grow, you know. And it's like when you asked me the first question about one point in my life that got me here, I never would have gotten here if I never would have made that decision when I was 16, living in a crack house, going, what the hell am I doing here? I need to get out of here. And so reaching out to my mom saying, like, I need help, you know, get me out of here. And she did, right? And then so many other turning points, like being a correctional officer, being a sheriff, so many things, but none of them would have happened without that one moment. And even when I was teaching Taekwondo when I was 17, I never thought, I want this for her, for a career. It was just like, this is better than making pizzas. I love this, you know, so I'm going to do this more. And then going to school is for corrections. I couldn't teach anymore because that schedule is very demanding, but I was still able to practice, and I never lost my ability to train. So even though I never taught through my 20s, I trained every day and never lost any of my skills or my knowledge. And then when I moved here, it just seemed like this is what I can do. You know, this is what I know the best. I know it better than anything. I've been teaching for 3 years, and I teach every day, and I can tell you I've never had a plan for class. It just, this is what we're doing today. As soon as I see who's in the room, okay, I got my plan. You know what I mean? It's just, it comes so organically to me and so naturally to me that this is what I'm meant to do. And working with kids is what I'm meant to do on this earth. I'm meant to, I think my purpose is to show kids that it doesn't matter what your background is, and it doesn't matter where you come from, especially here with all the poverty and all the struggle, the lack of education. Guess what? You don't need to be a scientist. You don't need to be a biology expert to teach a Taekwondo class. You can speak Spanish, you can teach class. You can speak English, you can teach class. You're bilingual, you can teach it all. You know what I mean? Because I'm the textbook, and I'm the one that is going to show you everything you need to know. You know, I remember my grade 10 math teacher making me feel like such a failure because I failed math twice. And guess what? I freaking suck at math still. But I'm looking at my calculator right now while I'm talking to you, the calculator that my teacher told me I would never have, you know? And so the school system, in a way, just teaches kids to fall in line. And if you don't, then you're not going to succeed. Where I think, and what you do with your kids, and what I try to show with my kids through my outlet, is creativity conquers all. So if this is your creative outlet, you can make a job out of it. If you love art, painting, you can make a job out of that. You love building things, you can make a job out of that. Like, we're living in a world where providing a service, I find, is way more successful than just receiving an education, you know? Like, when I think of, okay, you're going to learn how to build patios from wood, you know, like how to work with wood. Maybe you never went to school for that, but now you have a skill that people are willing to pay you for, you know? I never went to a university for Taekwondo, but I went to an academy, one of the most prestigious academies, for all my life. And now I have so much, I forget more than I remember, you know? And I just think, like, a good message is, it really doesn't matter what you're taught in school. What matters is you're taught what excites you, you know? And so for me, it was Taekwondo. I know some other kids here that really love animals. So they're volunteering at horse ranches, learning how to take care of horses. And that's the shit that matters, you know? Nobody cares if you know how to do algebra. And I don't know anybody that uses it daily in their work. I'm sure there is, but not everyone, you know? And so I think it's important that through my experience, people learn that you really never know where this life is going to take you. But the most important thing is find something that you're so passionate about and spend your life like making yourself an expert in what you're passionate about. And then find a way to make it a career to share your passion with others, you know? Like, I know Taekwondo is what I'm passionate about, and I am now making a career sharing it with people who are passionate about it. And let's say out of every 10 students that sign up, a year later, I have one, the same one. But guess what? This student is so freaking passionate that it's a, I almost want to pay them to come to class, you know, like it's, that's how much I love them. And then you do that year after year. And it was the same when I was a kid, year after year, you're doing that. And now you got 15 kids that are passionate out of your 50 rosters of students. And that's the way, that's the way. And so finding, it's our responsibility as adults to find what sets somebody's soul on fire, what sets these kids' soul on fire. And we can see, we can see these things in kids. We can see when they're bored, and we can see when they're excited. And then it's my job to just fan that flame. Hey, this kid loves this. Well, guess what? I'm going to fan your flame, and I'm going to teach you everything that I can about it. So now, as you grow into it, you can decide if it's for you or if you find something else that lights your fire, you know? I think that's the biggest message that I could give for anybody that's in a position like that.
And that's a great message, Alex, honestly.
Yeah, because the school system let me down, you know, as far as what I thought it was and what I got from it. I will say, and I'm not knocking the school system entirely, because I have excellent English linguistic skills. you know, I can read and write very well. So I'm not just poo-pooing on all the school system, but we don't spend enough time finding out what each individual can do creatively on their own, like a route for them, you know. There's so many opportunities in this world for people to succeed, but the school system kind of does this with them, you know? And I think it's important for people to see outside that.
It really
Sorry,
is.
I kind of got off topic a little bit.
Not at all, no. I think 100% what you're saying is so true. A lot of us just tumble our way out of grade 12 into doing things because it's what we're just supposed to tumble into the next thing, but we don't actually know what our core values are. Like, what are the things that make us feel alive? And like you, I think you said it so perfectly. It's like, what are the things that make you feel alive? And sometimes it's just, it feels like it's the idea of being an adult is it's cut into a square and you have to fit somewhere in that square. When you realize like there's just, it's endless opportunities. It's like, if you love something, I mean, then your life is shining and you spread a light and that light trickles and it makes somebody else like lean towards their light. It's just, it's very inspiring. You know, I think kids, little kids show us so well the beauty of life because for one, little kids are so imaginative. They've not been put into a box yet and they just, anything's possible and they're an airplane and then they're a ladybug and they're everything. And they're embody these things. And children are so, so good at imagination and just like, there's no boundaries and we can easily just like get shrunk and it gets tight. And it's like, no, you got to fit in this little spot. When I feel like it's for your story, it's like you weeded through a lot of things. And the thing that inspired you, the passion that you had as a kid, that 7-year-old Alex, you know, he was inspired and loved to move his body this way. You found him again. He came back to that. And now you're inspiring that light that little 7-year-old Alex had into 7-year-old, you know, kids now and letting them shine in that. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Alex, what you're doing.
It really makes me feel like tears of joy, you know, when I think of that. And even I just had an opportunity to go back to Canada in July, and I went to see my original master, Master Lessard, the one that's taught me since I was 7.
Wow.
And he was like a father, you know, just because my dad was not present and a bad drug addict. And so my master, Master Lessard, taught me, you know, what chivalry means, how to be respectful, how to be courteous. Mm. The man taught me how to shave my face. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't have any male role model. And so I was able to go back and visit him for the first time in 10 years last month.
Wow.
And it was a really beautiful experience and really hard. Just because, one, he's going through some health issues, so that was hard for me to see. But then just like talking to him about, I'll send you a picture of him and I after this podcast is over and you'll see what I mean. But I never thought that the little boy in that photo, I'm following directly in his footsteps, almost to a T, to the year, you know, like the photo of me with him, he's got a suit and tie on and his hands on my shoulder. And I just got my black belt and I'm 11 and I'm wearing a track suit and he's like smiling with me. And I'm like, he was 32 years old in that photo and I was 11. What? And now I'm doing testings with kids. I'm 31 years old and I got my hand on their shoulder taking photos. And I'm like, what? Oh. You know, like it's gone into a full loop.
It's a full circle.
And Without him, I would have had nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing like I have. Excuse me. So, even when I saw him in Canada, I've been trained since I was a little boy in Taekwondo. Yes, sir. No, sir. And that was like way more serious then than it is in this day and age. So I'm 31 years old and I see him and I'm like, hello, sir. How are you? You know, he's like, call me Chris. Like, chill out. Like, but what used to be like a firm handshake when I saw him, I haven't seen him for 10 years, was like a 10-second embrace, you know, like a big hug. And we both cried, which is like, this is the toughest person I know other than me. And we're both crying. And it was just like, I don't know how to explain the feeling other than it was like understanding, you know, and gratitude. And he'll never teach again. Like, he won't have the opportunity to teach again. But when I was there, he gave me a uniform. And the uniform is like a it was the uniform he was wearing on my first day. And it was a black belt uniform with our club logo on it. And it had a Canadian flag across the back. And I remember being, and he had his black belt. Right? He has black belt with five degrees on it. And I was just like, wow, you know. And so I remember being 7 years old and being like, can I touch your belt? Sure. So I'm looking at his belt and I'm like in awe, just touching his uniform. And he taught in that uniform almost every day. It just had, like I said, Canadian flag on the back, Canadian embroidery down the sides. And then 10, 25 years later, he invites me over to his house because he wants to see me. And I wanted to see him. And after having coffee and having a hug, he pans me a bag. He's like, I want you to have this. And so I open it up, and it's his uniform, you know, his first teacher's uniform. And now he's given it to me. And like, at the same age, you know, like he would have been 30. And now I'm 30 and I'm putting on his uniform. You know, and it still has our club crest on it that doesn't exist anymore. That school is gone. So it's like, it was called Atlantic Coast Taekwondo Academy. And now I have it, you know, and something that I thought was dead or gone forever. And now every time I teach, if I want, I could put on this uniform that he left for me. And then he told me, he's like, I'm never going to teach again, but my legacy lives on through you. You know? I never thought anybody would say something like that to me. Aww. And my mom, who saw me teach when I was a teenager and who saw me train with Master Lessard, when she sees me teach, she's like, you are just a reflection of him in everything. And I'm sure when you talk about Kiki, like not being able to find an instructor that's like me, I'm sure for sure if he was teaching, I could send her to him and she would fall in love. You know, just because everything that I
this man taught me how to become a man. This man taught me how to become a fighter. This man taught me how to respect women. This man taught me how to be responsible for my actions, you know? He taught me how to be an incredible fighter. And then he taught me how to become an incredible teacher. And so if I think about everything as a whole, I owe this man so much gratitude and love. And I hope to honor his legacy in a good way and teach people in a good way and make him proud. And he did tell me he's proud of me, which is not something this man doesn't dish out compliments. So for him to say he's proud of me was just like, it hits hard, you know. And for him to say you should be proud of yourself, because opening up a Taekwondo school is hard. And I did it in a third world country where I don't know the first language, and it's working. Like, so far it's working, and it seems like it's going to keep on growing. So yeah, none of this would have happened without that decision to get my life on track when I was 15 or it was right around 15, 16, but it was that decision to leave behind all the drugs and the partying and to just get back into positive lifestyle choices, you know, move back with my mom just to, that was like, I need to get out of the drug house, you know? And so moving back with my mom was, that was so I could breathe, you know? And then within a month, I started back at Taekwondo, and then the rest is history, you know, just one thing after the other. And if I never would have joined Taekwondo again, I never would have had the chat with Master Johnson about a career in corrections, you know? And if I never would have gotten that career in corrections, I never would have learned how much I hated it and sought out the career in sheriff services. And then moving to sheriff services, getting a full-time job and working through COVID, and everything that happened during COVID, I never would have gotten to the point where I realized I hate this and I need to change it. So that was another pivoting point. But like I said, without that first one, who the hell knows where I would be? Maybe I'd still be in those drug houses, you know? But it was that pivotal moment that, I think we're all aware that life does this. But without that one string of events, that one glitch in the universe, that paved the way for me to be here today. And I can say with confidence, I don't think I'm meant to do anything else. You know, I think my, not teach Taekwondo. I do, like, that's my medium. But I think my job in this world is to make a difference for people, to help people believe in themselves, to help show people that it doesn't matter what you have, what you had, who you are, or who you have been. You can do better, you can be better, you can set your you can set your bar high. You know, you have permission. There's nobody in this world that can stop you other than yourself. You know, everything that I've done with zero support. When I like zero support, I did it with my own gut instinct and I just swallowed my fear, you know, and everything's going to be okay. No matter how scary something is, everything's going to be okay, even if it's not, you know, and to worry about things like it's not going to be okay. Like, why are you killing your present moment worrying about the future? What if it is okay? Then you just worried for nothing, you know? Just everything's going to be okay. And one day, if it's not okay, then handle that shit then. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. and guess what? You're mm-hmm. probably going to come out the other side. And so it's just like my job, my sole purpose is to help. I want to help kids, you know, but mm-hmm. I want to help everyone. If there's a 40-year-old that wants to come to my class that needs help, that needs guidance, fucking come on. Excuse my language, but like, mm-hmm. come on. I just mm-hmm. I want everybody to see how brightly they can shine when they finally feel the permission to do so. And if I'm an avenue that helps them get that way, or if martial arts is an avenue that helps them get that way, or if I can even point them in a direction that I feel might suit them as an individual, I'll do that. You know, I just want, mm-hmm. I just know that through all my trials that I'm settling in on my final adventure, and that's to be a good mentor, a good role model, a good teacher, and a safe space for everyone. You know, you can come here if you're sad. Yeah. You can come here if you're mad. You can talk to me about anything. And I just want to support my community and hopefully be able to grow to a point where now I have teachers that are in other communities, hope helping those communities.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Alex, it. That's the story.
You had me in tears, buddy. I
had myself in tears.
This is why I'm doing this. This is why Naked exists. This is why the space exists. Is for people to hear your story and to, like I said to the beginning, if you just inspire one person, if just one person listens and they have hope for their own story, then all of this is worth it.
Exactly. And including a member of your family, I've had other students that have had a profound change in their life, just Taekwondo. And it doesn't even matter if they're going to dedicate their life to it. It doesn't matter if they do it for a year and quit. What matters is what they took from it will never, ever, ever go away. You know? I know for sure whether your daughter continues or doesn't continue, she learned a lot about herself. And she learned a lot about her inner power. She found her voice. I really think that whether it's a short-term or a long-term exposure, if it's for you, it's going to have the right message or the right guidance, you know. It, like, discipline that I learned from Taekwondo helped me achieve two careers at a young age. It helped me become a champion bodybuilder. It helped me become a champion strongman. Like, all these things, I owe that to the discipline that I learned through Taekwondo. So it's not just about kicking and punching. It's about character building and personality development, you know. And about helping people.
And you're doing it. And I'm so thankful that our worlds found each other in this massive space that actually is not that big when you look at the world and you end up traveling. You're like, people connect that seems like they should never have connected. I mean, you and I come from the same country, but our worlds would never have crossed.
I even remember, I think it was at like a Christmas party I met you guys.
I think so, yeah.
And we're like, these guys are weird. And we ended up being neighbors. My first inclination when I meet people is like, it's like, oh, these guys are weird. I like weird. Weird is my kind of people. Weird just means
take that as a compliment.
You got something. You got a definite compliment, because I've always known the weird people to just have a perspective that may intrigue you, and you guys without a doubt have. Grateful, because I learned a lot working with Kiki as well. You know, I'm a teacher, but I learn from my students every day about how to become a better teacher, because my what worked with me would never work with Kiki. I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. I had the more hard route. Some kids need that. I have students that I am very hard on them. And then I'll turn to the next student and be like, great job. You're doing so good. You know, it. People mm-hmm. need different outlets. And
different outlets.
Working with, at yeah. being a teacher and having different students has shown me and only helped me become a better teacher. Because when I first became a teacher, it was always, you're okay, stand up, let's go. And then my master's like, Alex, sometimes they're not okay. Like, what the hell do you mean? Every time I got hurt, you told me I was okay. You know, like right. That was my experience. He's like, yeah, but we can do it a little different now. So I'm grateful for each and every one of my students because they all helped me grow as a teacher.
No, and I'm grateful for you because not only did we get the chance to have you part of our group, but you have forever impacted Key. And like you said, it's just one of many kids. And you don't always hear how you've changed someone's life. But like no. I said in the beginning, you can never uninvest in someone's life. Just like your master when you get 7-year-old you and then 15-year-old you returning. I can only imagine how hard it could have been to return to something in a state where you were so different from when you left. And that shame or that like yeah. guilt, how will you be accepted? How will you be embraced? And it sounds like it was like, oh no, I see it in you still. Come on, let's go. And they just took yeah. you in and they trained you and you weren't shunned and you were just embraced in that space. And that turned out for you to be who you are. And now you're doing that for kids and passion breeds passion. And that's what's happening, happened in your life. And it's what's happening in your life now and then. And I'm so, so thankful that you shared your story, Alex. I feel like so much of what you shared will land in so many people's hearts and resonate and inspire and encourage and remind them to get up and to go towards their passions, to not stop, you know, to find the thing that lights them up, to be the light so that others can also see and be the light in their own life. And I'm just...
Yeah, you nailed it. Nailed it with what you just said.
So grateful for you, buddy.
Find what lights you up and shine as bright as you can and give permission. You don't have to verbally give permission, but when your light shines bright, the people around you are going to feel the permission to do the same with themselves. And I see 100%. It all the time here when people are cracking out of their shell, learning how to do Taekwondo, they're developing, you know, and it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's amazing. Thank you, Alex, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much for being here. It reminds me that this space is important. It reminds me to keep doing this. And I'm just so grateful that you're so honest and authentic and just you. You do shine and keep doing what you're doing. I am so proud of you and I'm so grateful to know you and to have you in my life.
You know, and proud of you guys too. I miss you guys a lot. I love you and I love your family very much. So be sure to give them my love. And thank you for inviting me onto this podcast. And happy to do it again anytime. Or if I find somebody quirky like me that I think will be a good fit for your podcast, I'd be happy to introduce them.
That would be amazing. Amazing. Sending you so much love and a big old giant hug from me to you.
Big hugs. Big hugs.
Love you, buddy.
Love you too.
Ciao.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcast goodness. This way you'll never miss out on any future episodes, plus it really helps us. And if you want to share your favorite episode with a friend, that would be absolutely incredible. This goes a long way. If you'd like to join Naked by sharing part of your story, just leave us a message on Instagram or email us at nakedwithjanelle@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to my son, Mikkel, who is the best cheerleader and maybe one of the biggest believers in Naked, and also produces and edits all our podcasts. I am beyond grateful for him and very aware that I couldn't do this on my own. Thank you so much for tuning in and for being here.